War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment, 26 November, Year of Our Lord 2019, Episode 48 from the Breitbart Embassy on Capitol Hill, yards from the Supreme Court and right across the plaza from the Capitol, where this drama has been playing out over the last several weeks, but in D.C. and the nation over about the last 6 or 7, 8 weeks. We are here at War Room Impeachment, and we will be on the air every day until the day after the 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, is acquitted. We're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, the Salem Radio Network, AmericasVoice.news, also now carried by Chris Ruddy and the great team at Newsmax TV. And wanted to give a hat tip to, by the way, Newsmax, 70 million homes, fastest growing cable network in the country. Also on Jim Hoff's Gateway Pundit and Michael Patrick Leahy, his family of websites and newspapers throughout the Midwest, Tennessee Star, Minnesota Star, up in Michigan, all the battleground states where Michael Patrick Leahy said he was going to put out the news. Honored to be joined today by wingman Raheem Kassam, the right-hand man of Nigel Farage, in the one of the strategists in back of Brexit, which we're hurtling to on December 12th. Also, Jason Miller, who is down the line and on the road for us out in the heartland of this country to find out what's going on over this holiday season. And Greg Manns, one of our lead people in the Rapid Response Group of the War Room, is now joining us today. We're going to be honored to have Congressman Barry Loudermilk from Georgia join us. Congressman Loudermilk on? Do we have
Jason? Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Congressman, how you doing? Is Jason, are you with us? Did we ever track you down?
Yep, I'm here. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing? Jason Miller and Congressman Loudermilk. So, Congressman, this is the break in this what the president calls a sham, what the Democrats are calling a process that needs to we need to go through to defend our Constitution. You're back in one of the great states in the South, but what has turned into be a battleground state. What is the sense of folks down in your part of the country?
Well, mostly frustration. They see it for what it is, what the president and many of us have called a sham. You know, you mentioned the Democrats see it as a process to defend the Constitution. Nothing could be further from the truth. Then the people see that. This is a process to get rid of a duly elected president because they don't like it. They can't stand it. And the process is even flawed. And so the American people are seeing this. I've had numerous conversations with people I know and people just coming to me on the streets or if I'm in a restaurant saying, what is going on in Washington? What has happened to our country? And that's really what they see this, is that they're not recognizing what's happening in Washington, D.C. is a value of our nation. And I think as the polls are showing what we've known for a while, that's starting to resonate across the country.
Look, you're an Air Force, and by the way, Jason, Raheem, feel free to jump in here. But one thing I want to get, you're an Air Force intelligence officer for about 8 years. That's about as long as I spent in the Navy. What did you think about this? The folks, and they were patriotic and served their country, but this array of folks, you know, Ambassador Taylor, Colonel Vindman, you know, Dr. Fiona Hill, this group from the NSC, the State Department, the Defense Department, you know, witness after witness coming up and really essentially, and maybe I'm wrong, I want to hear your opinion, saying, hey, we don't agree with the Commander-in-Chief's national security policy. We don't agree with the Commander-in-Chief's foreign policy. We like the old policy. Is that the way you sensed it? And how does that sit with you as a former Air Force intelligence officer?
Well, I think there's two aspects of it. One, they don't like the policy because it's different. And that's the key to a lot of these people. Look, there's an elitism in Washington, D.C. And unfortunately, some of that exists within the military. You can see that within a lot of the general ranks, the admirals in the Pentagon. It's a different class. It's not the warrior class that we knew during World War II. It's a more political class. Some of these people, and I'm not lumping them all together. It's just certain people in leadership who have over the last few decades, whether they're bureaucrats, whether they're in other agencies or in the Department of Defense, they have worked under a system, and they've paid their dues to society to elevate themselves and use the dysfunction of Washington, D.C., use their positions, use their power for influence. The government prior to this president wasn't run from the White House. It wasn't run from Congress. It was run within the agencies, especially the three-letter agencies.
Wow.
They ultimately made the decisions, regardless of what the president's priorities were. These bureaucrats were the ones in power.
Okay, hang over a second, because this is a quite brilliant analysis and something fresh we haven't heard before. Explain to the audience what you mean by that, because that's a very original take on things.
Look, these bureaucrats, many of them are career, meaning that this is their entire life has been within these agencies, whether it's EPA, IRS, Department of Defense, the Department of State. They have been on the front lines. They're the ones who ultimately make the decisions, or have in the past, especially over the last few decades, of what happens. So when you have these politicians run for office and they campaign on these things, many of them want to do the things they campaign on. But when they get in office, they find out, well, it just can't get done. And quite often, it's people not willing to do those things. This time you have a president who says, if you're not on board, I'm going to get you out. The problem is you can't fire anybody from the federal government. And these folks know it.
You see, this is what I love about this, because I'm not a deep state guy. I say it's right up in your grill, but I am an administrative state guy. And one of the driving forces of President Trump was much deeper than deregulation. It's deconstruction of the administrative state. And this is what you're talking about, whether it's the alphabet agencies or the congressional, you know, or the cabinet secretaries or those cabinet departments. You're saying they've kind of metastasized in their own branch of government that runs things beyond Capitol Hill and really beyond what is considered the executive branch from the White House.
Exactly. Look at Ambassador Taylor's testimony. It becomes clear there. When I read this, I knew exactly what was going on. He kept talking about the unconventional the communications direction that was different, the policy that was not the standard. What he was saying is, look, we have established a procedure of where the ambassador, acting ambassador, is the one who communicates with everybody in the country.
Right.
Well, you had this time period where there was no ambassador, when the president relieved Yovanovitch of her responsibilities, which, by the way, if you remember, Obama did before he even was sworn in. He went across the entire diplomatic corps, and he fired all of the political appointees and told them, get out of your office. You don't even need to be in your office when I take over. He didn't even give them, you know, ask them if they're doing a good job or not. Or, you know, he just fired everybody.
Yep.
No one had a problem with that then. But you see, with Ambassador Taylor, there was this time period that there was no one in Ukraine. You had another channel of communications open up. And quite frankly, I think that was an opportunity to actually bypass the bureaucracy, to actually get the president's priorities done instead of it falling on deaf ears, which happens quite often in the administrative state. They don't like his policy, so they will just delay implementing it.
Okay.
I'm hoping he'll forget and go away.
Okay, so by the way, we're coming up on a short break we're going to take, Congressman. I want to get one more thing in here about this. How, for people particularly that came to this impeachment with broadcast TV, you know, the lower information voters or people that just are not involved in politics in your district in the state of Georgia, how do you get this dialogue going? How do you get this concept up out there about the administrative state? We're going to get to opportunity costs when we get back, like USMCA, but this central issue, which is one of the beating hearts of the Trump administration, you see it in Gorsuch, in his Supreme Court picks, Kavanaugh, this understanding of the deconstruction administrative state. How do you get that out there and actually have a discussion so the voters know what's going on?
I just simply say, look, this is an unconventional president. And probably the best way I explain the president is I say, he is the George Patton of president. When you think about it. He doesn't follow the conventional lines. He doesn't really care what other people think about his decision. Once it's done, he wants it done, and he's going to move forward. He's very effective, extremely. He's probably one of the most effective presidents we've had in history when you look at what has been accomplished in the first 3 years.
Hey, Congressman Lomberg, we need to take a short break. Please hold, because we're going to get into this more about his presidency and also about the opportunity cost of this impeachment. We have Congressman Barry Loudermilk, a former Air Force intelligence officer, now a sitting member of Congress from Georgia, which is now a battleground state. This is Stephen K. Bannon with Jason Miller, Greg Manns, and Raheem Kassam on War Room Impeachment. Take a short commercial break on the John Fredericks and Salem Broadcast Network, also Newsmax TV, America's Voice.news. We'll be back in a moment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, episode 48, John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Broadcast Radio Network, America's Voice.news, Newsmax TV. We're on the line with Congressman Barry Loudermilk from Georgia 11. Georgia is now a battleground or swing state. Congressman's back for the holiday season to talk to his constituents. I want to go back to this thing he's patenting. Is what he's doing in this disruption, that's his management style. Do you believe and support Congressman Loudermilk, the direction, particularly on national security policy, America first? And I understand that this kind of expeditionary, the military has been turned into an expeditionary humanitarian force throughout the world, far different than what I was when I was in the Navy in the Persian Gulf and, South China Sea and North Arabian Sea back in the 70s. Is directionally the president correct?
I think so. And I think it's the direction that the American people would like to see us go. And let me just correct one thing before we go forward. I actually, when I served in the Air Force, I was on the enlisted side. When I worked in intelligence, I was a non-commissioned officer. So out of respect to others, and I know that those on the left are going to seek everything they can to undermine this conversation we have. So
when you were an enlisted man in Intel, you made a comment earlier about the general ranks and this politicization. How long has this happened over the last couple of decades? Is this because of the wars in the Middle East? Is it because of a more highly politicized process of choosing general officers? What do you believe has caused this, since you've seen this from the enlisted ranks?
You know, I've done a lot of studies on this as well, both in college and since I've been in Congress. And I think a lot of this is post-Vietnam. It is changing the national security direction as a result of Vietnam. And it's kind of politicized the general ranks to the point of our generals being as much foreign policy experts per se as they are. We've got to move these men, troops, ships into this position to further present the power of the United States. So I think you need some of that when it comes to strategy, but I think we've gone too far in that, is that the commander-in-chief is the commander-in-chief. He's also the head diplomat.
Do you think that
we've seen that change?
So do you think that in the hearings they've had the last couple of weeks, you called it, other Republicans and the president have called it a sham process. Do you believe, given the president's authority by the Constitution as commander-in-chief, do you think what Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff are running is a sham process?
Absolutely. I mean, I read over the entire impeachment resolution, to actually formally but informally start impeachment hearings that had already been going on in secret, which in my mind is unconstitutional. Look, the whole thing was a sham from that point. When you compared it to the previous two resolutions for President Clinton, the impeachment of Clinton and of Nixon, this was totally off the rails, totally off the rails. It totally favors one side, which the Democrats, they're smart enough to know that they don't have any impeachable offenses as bad as they want it. I mean, it's there so bad they could taste it. They're that close to it. So to keep the other side from bringing reasonable doubts or even vindicating the president, they actually put rules in place to where it puts Adam Schiff in total control of what the Republicans can present, what the president can present. what questions can be asked in committee. But even with all that, the truth is coming out. And so,
it's part of that, brother. It's part of that truth. And are your constituents seeing it as you're back discussing this over the Thanksgiving holiday? Do they understand the opportunity cost of what this has sucked out all the oxygen out of the air in Washington? The opportunity cost of no USMCA, no new NAFTA deal, no infrastructure, no prescription drugs, no opioids. Do they get that? This is time that's not being spent on other things?
To an extent, because that's really what we and the president are messaging at this point. They do understand it from the USMCA perspective. Last week, Nancy Pelosi went to the microphone and was asked about USMCA, and she said even if we came to an agreement today, there wouldn't be enough time to get it done before the end of the year. I tweeted out that's because we're wasting all this time on an impeachment. That went viral. People understand there is an opportunity cost there. They already see Congress as a do-nothing, and when now that Congress decides to do something, they're going to go impeach a president.
Do you know,
pretty popular among the American people, you know?
Have you, there's been some talk about shifting in the polls, particularly among independents, although CNN, our favorites, have a poll up today that says 50-50. We've got John McLaughlin in the next half hour, one of the top pollsters for the president, is going to come on here and talk about that. But Congressman Loudermilk, do you think that Democrats, do you see any weakening in their ranks, and do you believe, in your best judgment, that she will continue to press forward to take a report to judiciary and then from judiciary to the floor to vote on articles of impeachment before Christmas?
Yes, I do see some on the other side. As these hearings have progressed, that they're seeing it and hearing it back home, they don't want this to go forward. The thing is, I think her back is against the wall. What is she going to be able to do at this point? That's my question.
What do you mean by that? You think Pelosi's a master political strategist? This is now Trump versus Pelosi, right? Forget the Democratic field. She's right. A master. She ran a master class for 6 weeks unopposed and drove those numbers in the direction against the president. You think now he's got her boxed in? You think her back's to the wall on this?
I think it is. I mean, I don't see the same master strategist of Nancy Pelosi that has been in the past. Look, this president plays three-dimensional chess. And I think she may have met her match here because, first of all, he's out there just conducting the business, acting like, hey, this is a distraction to me. I've got to go on about governing the nation. And since Congress isn't doing anything, I'm just going to pick up their slack and go forward. That's the impression that people are getting about the president, and they appreciate it. At this point, if Nancy Pelosi doesn't bring articles of impeachment to the floor, it's gonna demotivate their base extremely badly, and it's going to empower the AOCs and the far left.
Look,
even more.
Georgia, everybody's telling us, all the pollsters are telling us this is a state that's now, like North Carolina, is a new battleground state for in Arizona. These are three new battleground states for 2020. How is impeachment going to play down there? If she goes forward with these articles of impeachment, how is that going to impact the 2020 race?
I think it only further strengthens the president because one thing these polls miss is that silent group of Trump supporters who typically are not coming out and voting down ballot, they're just going to the polls for Donald Trump. That area is where we lost in a key race in Georgia, Congressional District 6, is those core Trump voters in that area just did not show up in the last congressional election. I think you've seen that across the board.
Why can't you get that? Why can't the Republican Party? Why can't they get at these Trump voters to come out and vote for something? Trump would not be impeached if Michael Bloomberg's $100 million hadn't helped flip those 31 seats. We wouldn't be. What's right. The difficulty in convincing them that you got to be there all the time?
Because it's taken a while. These folks came out for Donald Trump, not for a party. Some of these folks I've met with that work in some of the factories around here. Even though Georgia is a right-to-work state, we do have some unions here. Yeah. And those that did vote voted the way their unions told them to in the past, even though they're red-blooded, patriotic Americans who love national defense. I mean, they're Republicans by policy. They just didn't know any different. Yeah.
Congressman Loudermilk, we got to jump. We got a hard break here. I want to thank you. Congressman Barry Loudermilk, been fantastic. Georgia 11, he's back home. We're going to take a short commercial break. Back in a moment.
Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, 26 November, year of our Lord, 2019. Episode 48, Breitbart Embassy. We're on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Broadcast Radio Network, America's Voice.news, and Newsmax TV, and of course on dozens and dozens of websites on their homepage across the nation. We're trying to get this out to everybody. We're here every day of the week until the day after, which we'll do a summary show, the acquittal of Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States. We got Jason Miller, our wingman, that is on assignment today. Raheem Kassam and Greg Manns are in studio in the war room. We're going to be joined by John McLaughlin momentarily, but I want to talk about the podcast is on fire. How do you get to the podcast, Raheem? And then the website is amazing. I have people this morning from Asia and from the Middle East that I told about it, had gone to the started going to the website and were just blown away because they get one-stop shop on all things impeachment. It's very confusing to people here in the United States and particularly people throughout the world.
Yeah, that's right. The website is warroom.org, and it is indeed a one-stop shop for everything that has not just impeachment focuses to it, but also the things that are surrounding it, like yes. USMCA, like the Hong Kong stuff, like the polling surrounding the 2020 election. We've got this new poll going up right now,
and
from
we've got
Emerson.
Emerson, and we've got the villains. We've got the squad up today. Are they coming up, Omar?
It's the lead story right now on the site.
Is she a Qatari asset?
Big story that broke yesterday on Al Arabiya and forwarded up by
one of the best news services in the
biggest and most
East,
reliable right. in the Middle East.
The AP of the Middle East.
Followed up by the Jerusalem Post. Al Arabiya says Ilhan Omar is accused of being a foreign agent in a legal deposition
Ouch.
By a Canadian businessman.
Ouch.
Via video link to
a
Florida federal yeah. court. Kuwaiti-born Alan Bender claims to have deep ties with governments and royal officials across the Middle East and says that without the cash that he and his friends had given to Ilhan Omar, I quote from him here, she would just be another black Somali refugee in America collecting welfare and serving on tables on weekends.
Wow.
That was in his sworn deposition.
Brutal. Okay, we're going to get back to that. This is the squad. These are the people coming after President Trump. We now have John McLaughlin, I think one of the most renowned pollsters historically in the Republican Party, and certainly somebody has this pulse on the Trump movement. John, we've been talking about this shift that's going on. I was on Fox last night. I was on Maria Bartiromo on Sunday talking about the shift of independence. But then this morning, CNN got right back at my grill, punched me in the face with a 50-50 that the nation split. You've got a better sense of this than anybody. Where do we stand right now on this subject of impeachment?
Well, first of all, that CNN poll is 1,007 respondents where most of it's cell phones, and they do it from a phone list. They don't use a voter list. So there's real discrepancies in the quality of these polls that they put out there, where the ones that are closer and better for us, like you and I survived the 2016 presidential election working for Donald Trump, and God let us win by 78,000 votes out of 139 million, when everybody else said there was an electoral lock and there was no way.
No, it was McLaughlin was my wingman. He was the one who kept making me feel better at night when he patted me on the head before I went to bed. We're going to win this thing.
Well, I was like, we can win this thing.
Yes.
We just got to win the turnout. And we won the turnout. The president busted his butt and got to five or six states a day, and Hillary was planning her victory party. But the reality of it was the polls back then were modeled after the 2012 polls where they thought she would be like Barack Obama. And the Democrats stopped polling. And the media followed that model. They were basically, you know, Chuck Todd was telling his pollster that we don't need to poll these battleground states like Michigan and whatever. We need to see if we can expand the map for the Democrats, where they were polling in Georgia and Arizona. They were looking to take states from us. But their models were wrong because they were assuming that it was going to be the same turnout as 2012. Now, we got a record turnout, 9 million more than 2012. We got 2016. And the president was able to win, but you're seeing polls now that are skewed, where they underestimate the number of Republicans. So the ones that are better, like Emerson this past weekend, had the president's job rule 49-48. They had most people opposing impeachment. That was modeled after the 2016 election. It was only plus three Democrat. And the questions were rather unbiased. And you saw it similar. New York Times sponsored a battleground set of surveys where Siena College.
Hey John, can I ask you to hold that? Because we got to take a short commercial break. Please, I want you to stay over. John McLaughlin, the pollster really for the president's on. Very honored. We're going to take a short commercial break. We'll return with War Room Impeachment, the entire crew, and John McLaughlin in a moment.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
Welcome back to episode 48, War Room Impeachment. John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, America's Voice.News, and now Newsmax TV. Chris Ruddy and the great crew at Newsmax, the fastest growing cable network in America. John McLaughlin, McLaughlin Associates, the pollster to the president, the wingman we had in 2016. We have Jason Miller, who's out in the hinterland. Jason, just jump in as you want, but I do want John to finish about this bias in the polling. These impeachment polls, John, are they making the same mistake? Are you actually seeing a real shift? This is what people want to know now. As America goes home to have this discussion around the Thanksgiving table, where do we stand right now?
Well, first of all, this is not going to be on the top of their mind. They want to stop talking about it. They're losing interest. But second of all, on the CNN poll, as a classic example, can you tell me what the number of Republicans were in 2016 when we won that election, what it was in the electorate from the exit polls?
Go ahead.
33%.
Yep.
Guess what it is in the CNN poll this morning? 25%.
26,
you take us down 8 points, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, come on. Then you start asking a whole questions about the president.
Why do they put that up there if it's so easy for someone like you to chop this thing up? Why are they so brazen? They must have some corporate logic and some defense. Their defense would be what? What would they tell you if you brought that up to them?
No, they believe. Well, what it is, they don't. They can't defend the 25%. But they also will. The way they rate the questions too against the president, it's like where they're asking, they just lead off with things that discourage Republicans from coming in. They've got, do you think Republicans defend the president too much, or too little, or about right? Well, they don't ask an analogous question about, do you think the Democrats are attacking the president too much? Or, like, we asked, this is a good example. The end of last month, we asked a series of questions we do a monthly poll, not for the president, but for our subscribers who subscribe to this monthly poll. And we asked them, do you think that Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats are moving forward with their impeachment inquiry against President Trump, mainly for political reasons to stop him from being reelected, or mainly for legal reasons? 52-36, they said mainly political to stop him from being reelected.
Wow.
And then when we asked them, do you agree or disagree with the following statement? Impeaching President Trump is a waste of time and tax dollars, and it will ultimately go nowhere. I should focus on working with Republicans to solve our nation's problems rather than focusing on trying to impeach President Trump. Among 1,000 likely voters, modeled after the 2016 election, 59% of all voters agreed with that. Only 33 disagreed.
Wow.
They think it's a waste of time and money.
Wow.
And we need to go on to other things. So when people are around their Thanksgiving table with their family, they're going to be talking about their own personal situations. And some of them will be talking about health care, and they're having trouble making the bills. Some of them will be talking about, my company's going to be impacted by, with Canada and Mexico. You got a treaty waiting for the Democrats to pass it, all set, and supposedly the rank-and-file Democrats want to vote on and pass it, but Pelosi and Schumer are just too busy with impeachment to get anything done.
Look, she's a smart master strategist. How did she get herself in this jam? She reads the same numbers. She's not fooling herself. How does she see, Raheem, jump in here, how does she sees this math, why is she pressing on?
Well, they're afraid that they were going to lose to President Trump, because when you think about it, the Mueller investigation came up with nothing. the week before the whistleblower story that broke on September 25th, the president's job approval was over 50% in the likely voter polls. Rasmussen is the only one they put on the Real Politics website. They had 52-53. They had the president leading Joe Biden by 4 points, 47-43. So they're thinking he's going to get reelected. We have to stop him. And the Moody's analytics came out with three models saying he was going to be reelected based on the low unemployment rate, what's going on Main Street, what's going on Wall Street. So you've got all these things that were saying he's going to be reelected. So what do? They launched the phony whistleblower complaint, and they changed the whole topic to impeachment to stop him from moving among independent voters, because the Republicans are rock solid with the president.
John,
he's got about 90% support with them.
John, this is Raheem Kassam. I just want to jump in on one of the questions that Steve asked you there. You know, how does CNN explain the methodology, the flawed methodology? You know, 1,007 respondents, 652 of those being on cell phones, which, as we know, lends towards a more liberal or young audience, and a margin of error of about 3.7%, which is higher than we've seen in the morning consult polls, for instance, that are showing a shift away from that. I say this, CNN knows that for the time being gets more listeners than War Room Impeachment does, and so they don't have to justify it. They don't feel like they have to justify those things. But then when you drill down into it as well and you look at some of the crosstabs, there is actually a hardening of support from people who don't think the president should be impeached and removed from office. It's a couple of percent, fine, but it's more percent than what they're leading with, which is 0%. Their headline is no movement. There right. actually is a movement. People over the course of the last month who said they don't want the president impeached have hardened in that viewpoint, according to their data. They bury that lead, John.
Yes. Plus, that poll is 1,007 adults. It's not registered voters.
Right.
They didn't screen for registered voters. They didn't screen for likely voters. There's 240 million eligible voters in the United States, over 240 million. In the last election, only 139 million voted. Now, it'll probably be higher this time, 150, 160 million. But they're doing phone calls to, like, anybody with a pulse that's over 18. And a lot of those people aren't going to vote.
Hold on. We got a buried lead there. Give me that again. You're projecting what's going to turn out for this for 2020? Because I haven't heard that number yet. What I haven't heard anybody publicly talk about this. What are you saying?
I think it could be as high as 150 million voters, maybe towards 160 million.
But 160 million voters?
If it climbs like it did for... If it climbs like it did for us, we went from 130 million the previous voters to 139 million.
Right.
And then when you look at the last two midterms, in 2010, you had 90 million voters out.
Yep.
2014, you had 83 million voters
yep.
out. The last midterm, we had 118 million voters out. And the Democrats did a better job of getting out their voters because they had 61 million votes nationwide for Democrats for Congress.
John's a top political pollster for the president. Real quickly, in 10 seconds, Bloomberg, what impact in the race on a scale from 1 to 10? A 10 or a 1?
It's a 1 for him, but a 10 in that he's going to spend a lot of money and try to affect the discussion of the debate, but it's really bad for Biden. It's really bad for Biden.
John McLaughlin, McLaughlin Associates. We're going to get a link to his site. John, thank you very much. Appreciate you coming on. Steve Bannon, War Room Impeachment. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, episode 48, Breitbart Embassy, John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Radio Network throughout the country, America's Voice.news, and now Newsmax TV, fastest growing cable network in the United States. Chris Ruddy and the team doing a great job. Okay, quickly, we've got McLaughlin was amazing. Loud America was amazing. Jason, I want to thank you. You can get up now. Stop being sleepy. Jason Miller down the line with us. No, but here's what we're going to do. Very important we do this. We got a clip. Raheem, tee up the clip. We're going to play the clip. And then, Jason, I want you to give the commentary. We've got about 3 minutes here, but this is very important about the direction of what is happening with the Democratic Party.
On October the 4th, Congresswoman Brenda Lawrence in Michigan, she told the Dean Obadala show on the SiriusXM network that she supported the impeachment process. But here's what Brenda Lawrence said when she was asked this just 2 days ago in a local called the No BS Network with Charlie LaDuff. I am having no luck here.
Didn't come up. We got
Charlie LaDuff has stopped me from playing his clip.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and say what she said.
This is what happens when I use a different bit of software for the first time.
Raheem, let's call it an air ball. There's nothing better on radio than dead air.
That's okay. That's okay. It's just building anticipation.
This is the war room.
I'll do it. Okay. She said we should begin the process, and if we impeach him, the Senate must act. That was in June, in October. She said, you can censure. You don't have to remove the president.
Okay, hold it. She was all in, and now she's
That's
blinking.
The most important
she's
point,
blinking.
Right? It's not censure. Like this person had expressed no position before.
Jason, we got about a minute. How big is that?
This is a massive bombshell. We said last week on War Room Impeachment that this was going to be the hell week for Democrats. When they go back home and they start hearing the music, voters are bringing up opportunity costs and they're upset. But, Steve, you have Brenda Lawrence from Michigan who's saying this, but you also have folks like the Chicago Tribune Ed Board, who this morning had an editorial out saying, get away from this impeachment nonsense, focus on censure. But you're even having these freshman Democrats like Anthony Brindisi and Cindy Axne, who voted to push forward on impeachment, now saying they're quote-unquote undecided. The poll in these swing districts is moving away from them. The voters are ticked off and they're tired of this nonsense, and now we're starting to see Democrats move away.
You're a master strategist too. She's got herself in this jam because Shifty Shift didn't deliver on his we don't need to play it now, Raheem. It's all good. What is Pelosi going to do? What's going to happen here, Jason? You got 30 seconds.
She has to charge ahead. She's beholden to the liberal base, the squad, the AOCs, and others. But she knows, look, Pelosi is a good strategist here, but she's backed the whole team into a corner, and she can't go and back away from it. But here's the thing, Steve. Every single pollster, every single chief of staff for these targeted districts are back home analyzing things over this week. They don't like how it looks, but they're trapped. Pelosi's going to take them right off the cliff.
Jason, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to be checking in with Jason throughout the rest of the week. Okay, we're getting ready to wrap up here on War Room Impeachment, episode 48. Remember, we're here every day. Raheem, we're on Stitcher. We're on iTunes. Just go. It's all free. Just download the podcast. WarRoom.org. You can get constant updates all the time. We'll be back tomorrow. We're discussing America's back home for Thanksgiving. And around the table, we're going to talk about the impeachment of Donald J. Trump. We're giving you all the information on War Room Impeachment.